All right, morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf tesim makos. We're behind. We're in daf chesim and aleph, and we just finished the Mishnah. The first statement the Mishnah made was somewhat of a bizarre statement. The Mishnah talks about throwing a stone into Rosh Hashanah, and the Mishnah says, "How is it gola? You're sent into galus," which means, and that's a case of shogeg. Now, one can only imagine that you're standing right over, right, just walk onto Palmetto Park Road, stand right over the turnpike, and you start throwing stones over, and, you know, maybe it'll hit a car, maybe it won't hit a car that's going on the turnpike, and you want to call that a shogeg. That's like a, it's like an accident. So it's not an accident. That's, you know, that's gross negligence. So what do the Mishnah mean by that? Well, it's just Rabbi Mezidhu. So the Gemara says, it even stronger. Gemara says it's not even gross negligence. Gemara calls it mazid. Right, it's intentional murder. So, okay, the point is very simple. You cannot understand the Mishnah literally. The Mishnah cannot possibly mean that you're sent to the Golos. Instead of being sent to the Golos means a shogeg. Can't be. So I'm Rosh Mobar Yitzchak. So here we go now. We're going to explain this line of the Mishnah. It's going to be a tricky explanation. It's going to be a little complicated because we're going to be looking for that shogeg scenario where you're going to be sent to the galus. So it's going to be a little tricky. The Gemara says, "Rosh Hashanah made to Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak b'Sosus Koslo." So you're demolishing your wall. So you're tired of the wall. You're redoing your house. You're redoing the wall. So you're taking stones out one by one out of your wall. So the Gemara says, "How does that help?" Okay, so good. So whenever you're dropping a stone into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, I don't care why you're demolishing your wall. You need to take a look. You need to see who, anyone there. Okay, no. Okay, good. Now I'll drop it. So Besosas Kosla Balayla. So the Gemara says, okay. So maybe you're demolishing at night. Gemara says, and so what? It's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. It's a public domain, which means that everyone has the right to go through there. So there's no difference whether it's during the day or whether it's at night. Balayla Nami Balayla Yuni. Should have looked there as well. Besosas Kosla Ashpa. Okay. So the Gemara says that when you're dropping the stones, you're dropping into an ashpa. Now ashpa little translates as a garbage. We do not mean here like a little basket of garbage. We mean over here an area that's designated for refuse. Okay, just an area that nobody's going to be walking on because it's an area where I dump all the things, all waste products. Not necessarily bathroom waste, but just simply it's a place designated for a dump. So, Gemara says, okay, but still, we're looking for the case of shogeg. We have to find the case of shogeg because the Mishnah says you're sent into galus. So what's the case exactly? If there's a lot of people walking through, poshehu. So in other words, the fact that it's an ashpa doesn't matter. If people are walking by and you just throw stones over there and your argument is, it's a dump. Okay, you think it's a dump, but people are walking over there. It's the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. They have every right to walk over there. You didn't look when you threw the stone. That's out of control. That's not choking. That's mazid. And if there aren't people walking over there, and so in other words, it's really an abandoned area primarily, and you throw stones onto there, so, assuming that nobody's walking over there, so that's not... So then we're on the other side of shogeg. We're on ones, right? You really did not expect, and you had a legitimate right not to expect people to walk over there. So it's a problem only because we're looking for that middle. We're looking for shogeg. So what's the case of me throwing a stone into this dump, which happens to be in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, where the consequence is I'm sent into galus, i.e. it's shogeg. So lo tzrich el al ashpa asui li panos ba balayla, vein asui li panos ba bayom. Okay, it's a kind of dump where at night people use it all the time and just dump things there at night, and during the day people walk through it. Hard to imagine that there's such a dump, but there is such a dump. Maybe a toilet. Okay, maybe at night people go to the bathroom. Okay.
Yeah, they
want to
do it
open
label.
Okay. The Iker, the Mikra, so, and sometimes during the day, right, somebody, I guess, needs the bathroom so badly. Look, I know it's the middle of the day, but, you know, I just need to go, and here's an ashpa, here's an area designated for this type of activity. So now, Now, you're not a poshea because generally during the day people don't use it. So your assumption that, well, there's nobody there. It's not a bad assumption. On the other hand, Onis Nami Lo Havadaika in the Mikra of Yosef. But to call yourself an Onis, you know that on occasion people use it, so you're also not an Onis as well. So what are you? So now you're in this middle category of Shogeg. So here, I can't come up with a better illustration of like where the gradation is between Poshea, Shogeg, Onis. Right? It's the same environment, it's the same exact environment, it's just that sometimes, depending if there's a lot of people over there and the expectation is that there's going to be a lot of people over there, that's Poshea. If there's nobody over there and there's no expectation of people to be there, that's Ones. And right, and then you throw a stone there and someone dies, that's Ones. And then you have this middle case over here where, you know, you can't quantify it. It's hard to really put a very quantifiable measure that sometimes people walk through it. You didn't expect them to be there because during the day people typically are not there. But once in a while people are there and the stone hits them and there's Shogeg. So really, you know, it's, you got to wrap your head around, you know, what's Ones, what's Shogeg, and what's Mazid. But here's a phenomenal illustration. Rav Loza ben Yaakov, Amartan Rabbanu Matzah Prat Lamam Siyas Atzmo. Right, the halacha of Rav Loza ben Yaakov is you throw a stone, nobody's there. After the stone has been released from your hand, somebody goes ahead and pops his head out, and the stone hits him. So that's not Shogeg. That's, we'll call that Ones, because that's what it is. It's a case of Ones. So problem I'm seeing that's when Mikan Amar Rebbe Lazar ben Yaakov, after the release of the stone from your hand, holds the halas roshav kibla al potter. So and he sticks his head out, you're going to be potter. Okay, lememra. Good. That makes perfect sense. Meaning, like we discussed yesterday in the Rambam, that's a classic example of Ones, because that was something that you should not have you could not have anticipated that. Meaning, you're throwing stones, you don't see anybody there, nobody's in the vicinity, and then after the release, somebody sticks out his head. Clearly, that's a classic example of Ones.
You missed the
Bershus Arabi? Yeah. In other words, he wasn't there when you were throwing it. You didn't see him there when he wasn't there when you were throwing it. And then after the release, where you no longer have control of the item, okay, so that's a case of Ones. Fine. That's fine. But what comes out over here, and the Gemara is going to be fascinated with this, with a grammatical point, is that when the Torah says umatsa, it means that at the time when you released it, it wasn't there already. Okay, we'll find another place in the Chumash where we have the word matzah, and it means just the opposite. On the other hand, we have another matzah in Chumash where it means prat lematzu. We're excluding something that existed beforehand. For example, shalo yimkra baruchak v'yigo b'karov v'ra v'yigo b'yafem. Okay. Redeeming a field. Every time you sell land in Israel, it's not really a land, you know it's a lease, because you know it's going to come back to you in the Yovel year, right? What about the owner coming to you before the Yovel year? So, and what do you do? Sorry, just one other point. So what do you do whenever you sell land in Israel? So you always prorate, meaning I know that between now and Yovel is 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, whatever the number is, and you prorate. And you simply say, based on the number of years and based on how much this field produces, I'm going to sell the land to you based on those numbers. What if the original owner wants to comes to you before Yovel and says, I'd like my land back? Well, what do you mean you'd like your land back? I bought it from you, meaning I leased it from you for Yovel. Yeah, I know you leased it from me, Yovel, but here I am, and you know it's going to come back to me anyway. I'd like to redeem it earlier. Can you do that? The Gemara in Erechim, we're going to discuss this Gemara later on, in the Shas cycle, the Gemara in Erechin just deals with this question of, can you get out of your lease early? Can you, the owner, the original owner, right, buy back the land earlier than the Yovel year? It depends. And what it depends on is something very simple. If you sold the land to begin with out of duress, out of financial duress, you had nothing, right? You were totally cash poor, and you have no assets, and you just needed money. And so you sold it out of total financial duress, and then later on, an uncle dies, a father dies, you won the lottery, right? You got into a great business opportunity, and you made serious money, and now you have the means to buy back, you can buy back the land. However, if you did not sell the land under duress, you had other assets. You just, for whatever reason, wanted to sell this land. You cannot buy it back early. How do we know this? How do we know this distinction? Verminu. Umatzah prat lamatzui. Because matzah over here means we're excluding matzui. Shelo yimka barachok v'yigo b'karov. Let's say I sell a land and I want to be goel with a land that's close to me. Or barav v'yigo b'yafa. Or I sell a bad land and I'm a goel with yafa. Meaning, I have another piece of land. Even at the time when I sold this land, I had another piece of land. And now I want to do a swap, meaning I'm going to buy back my original piece of land. And where's the money going to come from? I'll sell off another piece of land. That you can't do. So what comes out over here is that the word matzah means that right now, at this point in time, if you get money, then you have the right to redeem your land. But otherwise, no. So the Gemara says, fine. Sometimes matzah means originally, sometimes matzah means now, and it's all context. We talk about this time and again. Context is one of the most important ways in determining what is pshat in the pasuk. So because when it comes to redeeming land, in Parshas Bahar and Parshas Bichu Kosai, there it says v'hisiga yado. Your hand got a hold of something, meaning you got into some money. So the same thing is true with land. Like the only time that you're allowed to redeem land is only if the new piece of land that you have came after you leased it. So that's why we know matzah by land means you never had it previously. Fine. Hacha, but over here, minyana dekra, matzah dumia diyar. Over here, we're talking about being in a forest, right? When we talk about mitzvah b'shogeg, the environment is you're in a forest. And that means umatzah is talking about just like the forest. In other words, you take a picture of a forest. It's there, and it's been there. Meaning that's the environment that has existed for some time. So when I throw a stone, if the person is there already, has been there already, so then I'm guilty, then I'm culpable. Just like the forest. In other words, it has to be that the picture has to have been there in place at the time when I threw the stone. If, however, I threw the stone and after I throw the stone, now the guy sticks his head out. Yeah, but if you freeze frame the moment of when I threw the stone, so the guy wasn't there. So contextually, you just simply see that matzah, in the case of Misa B'Shogeg, is talking about a case where he was already there in the picture. Fine. Hazarik Yisra'evim, we go on in the Gemara, Amalei Homer, Rabban L'Rav, Amimai, Nemechatav, Aseitzim, Dereshus. Okay. I kill by accident. I'm sent into exile. Only when that which I'm doing is a voluntary act. Meaning I'm not doing a mitzvah. Right? Chatavas eitzim, chopping wood. So the assumption we're making is that I'm chopping wood because I want wood. I want to sell wood. Right? I mean, you know, you get to a point where you can make arguments. You could say, well, maybe I'm chopping the wood to sell it so I have a parnasa. Right? And making money is a mitzvah. Right? Earning a livelihood is a mitzvah. Alright, but and that's certainly true, but the Gemara is assuming that it's still rishus. That's considered a voluntary act. Meaning to say that if I'm doing a mitzvah, and in so doing the mitzvah, someone by accident dies, I'm not sent into exile. The Mishnah gave examples. We talked yesterday about the examples. Let's say the Rebbe's hitting his Talmud. Okay? And there's a mitzvah for a Rebbe to hit the Talmud. We'll talk more about that later on this morning. So a Rebbe's hitting his Talmud, and then the Talmud dies. Okay, so then the Rebbe's not going to go into Golos because he's involved in doing a mitzvah. Or the Mishnah gives another example, Ashlich Beis Din, right? Someone's Chayv Makos, so Beis Din says, okay, let's go. We got the whipper, and the whipper now is whipping somebody, but that's a mitzvah. So if the guy dies, and we're talking about a case where he didn't whip more than he should have, the guy dies, so he's sent into... He's not sent into Galus because he's doing a mitzvah. And all this is generated from the pasuk where the Torah describes chatavas eitzim, chopping wood, and the Gemara's assumption is that's a voluntary act. So now the Gemara says, how do you know? How do you know that's a voluntary act? Dilma mechatavas eitzim desukah mechatavas eitzim damaracha. You could say that he's chopping wood because he needs a sukkah. You could say he's chopping wood because they need wood for the fire on the top of the mizbeach. It doesn't have to be where I'm chopping wood because of my own personal interests. I could be doing a mitzvah. And still the Torah says, even though as I'm chopping wood, so now the blade falls off, flies off the handle and hits somebody and kills somebody, even while I'm doing a mitzvah, and the Torah says, you go to Golos. Right? He can't say that? Of course he can say that. So Amalei came to Yimatzah Chatov Lav Mitzvah Hashanami Lav Mitzvah. All right. So the Gemara starts off with the first answer, and that is, it's right. I'll use our terminology, even though the Gemara doesn't say it. That's Hechsher Mitzvah, right? I don't. On Sukkos, there's no mitzvah for me to go out into the forest and chop wood. I can go to Lowe's or Home Depot, right? I don't want to pick favorites. Right. And it's right. So I can go to Lowe's, I can go to Home Depot, I could buy the wood, and I didn't lose on the mitzvah. There's no bigger mitzvah for me to go out into the forest and chop wood myself. Right? I could buy the wood. So I don't, that's not a necessary part of the mitzvah. Therefore it's not a mitzvah per se. Of course, if I don't have the wood and I don't have the money, so then yes, I need to go chopping. But still, the idea is that that's not necessary part of the mitzvah. Eisve, Ravina l'Rava, Yatzah Hava Makas Benova Rava Rodes Tamid v'Shulch Beisden. So, Lema came into Ilu Gamir Lav Mitzvah Hashanami Lav Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, what if your son already knows? or the Talmud already knows. Like he's learned already. Like, and he's learned, right? He knows everything. That's hard to imagine. But just let's stretch our imagination, right? Right. Let's stretch our imagination. So they know. So let's say they know. They know Chumash. They know Gemara. They know. So over there, right? There's no mitzvah. Hasam afagav de gamir mitzvah. So the Gemara says, well, that's not a correct assumption. Even if they are gamir, even if they are learned, still it's a mitzvah. Okay, dichsev yaseh bin chaviyanichecha v'itain ma'adanim lanafshecha. The pasuk in Mishlei says, if you're miyaser. Now, Musar nowadays has a much nicer, gentler connotation. Right? You talk about Musar nowadays, you're like, you're going to hear a schmooze from a Rebbe. That's Musar. But, I mean, real Musar, right? Liyaser means it's more based on the word of Yisurin, meaning that the Rebbe is going to hit the pasuk in Mishlei says, Yaser bin Chavi Anichecha, v'itei ma'adanim lanafshecha. If you are miyaser, if you hit your child, so v'itei ma'adanim, you're going to eat ma'adanim lanafshecha, meaning you're going to reap the benefits of setting him straight. Right? Pasuk in Mishlei. So even if he's learned it, there still is a mitzvah. So that's not a good case study, that's not a good analogy. In the world of father-son, there's never a time when there's not a mitzvah. But I should point out, I'll state the obvious, right? We're not talking about abuse over here. We're not, you know, obviously. The Shulchan Aruch also writes, just, you know, throw this in just as long as we're on the subject of hitting your child. The Shulchan Aruch also writes that it gets a point in life where you should not hit your child because it's based on the Gemara and Kedushin, because you're going to tempt him to hit you back, right? And you're going to be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. He's not allowed to hit you. And meanwhile, if you just keep, you know, if you hit him, and then he's going to be tempted to hit you back. So there comes a point in time when the child is big enough where hitting them is not only not good, but it's not recommended. It's the Shulchan Aruch says no. Anyway, the Hada Amarava Lav Milsehi. Okay, so, but again, all this is really generated from the one question of, how do you know going into the forest is a rishus? How do you know that? Because maybe you're chopping wood for a sukkah, maybe you're chopping wood for the maracha. So Lav Milsehi Damri Vashe Yavos Reo Bayar. Di Bay Ayo V'i Bay Lo Ayo. The Asher tips us off. But you're wandering into the forest. You happen to be in the forest, meaning nothing was compelling you to go. You just were there. If we're talking about a mitzvah, what does that mean? You are wandering into the forest, right? Yeah. If it's a mitzvah we're talking about, you got to go into the forest. So just the whole nature of the way the Gemara, the way the Chumash sets up the scenario, is a clear indication that we're not talking about a mitzvah, we're talking about a rishos. Amalei Rav Abba Bar Ava LeRav Kol Echad Dichsiv Asher Asher Di'ibayihu. Every single time the Torah says the words Asher, that means it happens to be, if you wanted to, it's a voluntary. The Torah in Parshas Chukas talks about ish asher yitama, if the man happens to be tame, and he does not become, and doesn't purify himself, and he walks into the Beis HaMikdash, ibai mitama, ibai lo mitama, what does that mean? The one who's chayev kares, only right when he walks into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of tuma, is only going to be chayev kares if he voluntarily became tame, right? That's pshat in the pasuk. And then by extension, what does that mean? Makes mitzvah the losag de la matame hakanami de pater. So, and then you want to tell me, well, let's say he had to become tame, right? For what's an example? Makes mitzvah, right? You see a dead person lying in the street. No one's there to take care of him. One of the biggest mitzvahs in the Torah, the Gemara Megillah says, there's nothing that overrides, that supersedes this mitzvah of makes mitzvah. And you now have an obligation to go pick up the mace and bury the mace, and you're going to become tame, and now you're tame. So now you walk into the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim look at you and said, "Are you out of your mind?" He said, "Well, I didn't have a choice. I had to become tame. So for me, there's no problem." That's not true. The Gemara says, "Hachinami the potter." You want to tell me that you're potter? You're not going to. You're going to be excused from the prohibition of walking into the Beis HaMikdash while being tame. You don't have an excuse. You had every reason to become tame, but you have no reason to walk into the Beis HaMikdash while in that state of tumah. So the word asher over there, it does not mean if he wants to become tame. So shani hasam da makra. Tame yihyeh, mikom akom. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's different over there, because walking into the Beis HaMikdash while being tame, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, it doesn't matter why you became tame, as long as you're tame, that's it, period. Mikom akom. Let's just finish this up. Homi baile lechadetanya tame yihyeh l'rabas tevul yom tumasabol l'rabas mechus kipurim. The Gemara says that tame yihyeh is an inclusionary term. What does it include? Cases of Tvul Yom and Mechus Kippurim. Quickly, this is not our topic for now. We're a little bit off topic over here. Tvul Yom is somebody who becomes Tamei, tovels in the mikvah, but needs to wait until the evening. Between the Tvila and the evening, he's called a Tvul Yom. He has still a little bit of residual Tumah. If he walks into the Beis HaMikdash, Kares. Mechus Kippurim, right, a yoledes, a zava, or a zava, right, or a mitzora, who after their tumah, on the eighth day of purification, they need to bring a karban. Until they bring a karban on the eighth day, they're called mechusar kippurim. They're still lacking in kapara. If they walk into the base and make their shop until that point in time, Kares. So, and I need the pasuk of Tameh yet to include these categories of Tumah, even though they're residual Tumahs. They're not the primary Tumah. So, Amalei Anami Od Ka'amina. Right? Od. Right? What's the pasuk? Right? Od Tumasabal. Right? The idea that you're going to be, chayiv is generated from the idea, from the word of Od Tumasabal. Okay. Fine. Period. Okay, so good. So we have our first discussion. That the general idea is that galus is only going to be required if it was a voluntary action. If it's a mitzvah that I'm doing, so that the person's not going to be chayv galus. Okay. I mean, should he have been more careful? The obvious answer is yes, he should have. Right? But as a patur, as an exemption, because he's doing a mitzvah, because he's supposed to be hitting his student, hitting his child, giving the guy makas because Basin told him to do so. Because he's supposed to be doing those activities, so therefore there's less liability involved if in fact the death happens. Okay. Ikedamasin le'aha. Some take the discussion that we just had and apply to the following discussion. Becharisha v'katsir tishbos. The pasuk describes being Shomer Shabbos. And then it says, the pasuk says, Sheshes Yamim Tavod. The Gemara doesn't quote the Pasuk. I'm reading the Pasuk out of Rashi. Sheshes Yamim Tavod. Uvashvi Tishbo. 6 days you work. 7th day you stop working. And then the Pasuk goes on to say, Becharish Uvekatsir Tishbos. No harvesting. No plowing, no harvesting. Okay. Now, this Pasuk, this last part of the Pasuk, is talking about Shabbos? Could be, but it's not. Right, because why would the Torah go out of its way to talk about these particular malachas when there are other malachas to talk about? We've seen other times, one other time, where the Torah does single out one malacha. Right, lo sevaru eish b'chol moshal seichem. So there is another time in the Torah where the Torah does single out a malacha, but the Gemara over here assumes that this last phrase, becharish v'katsir tishbos, is not talking about it's not talking about Malacha Shabbos, it's talking about Shemitah. So the number 6 and 7 are not talking about days of the week, it's talking about years. 6 years you work the field, the 7th year you stop working the field. Now, Becharish v'katsir tishbos, Rabbi Kiva Amar, Einot Zarech Lamer, Charish shal shviz, v'katsir shal shviz, Sherei Kvar Namar, Sadecha Los Yisra, V'chamecha Los Yismor. Can't be talking about the 7th year because we already know that you're not allowed to work the land during the 7th year. What it means is before and after. Before the Shemitah year and after the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to work the land. How much before and how much afterwards, right? Its own discussion. But that's what Rabbi Kiva understands the Pasuk. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Macharish Rishus Af Kitzir Rishus. So Rabbi Shmuel says, no. You know what it means? It means that harvesting the land during the Shemitah year, that's only if it's voluntary. Meaning, let's say, I just want to eat. Nah, you can't harvest the land for that. You can't plow the land for that. But if you're doing so for a mitzvah, so that's okay even during the Shemitah year. Yasa Ktsir HaOmer Shu Mitzvah. An example would be Ktsir HaOmer. We know that when Pesach rolls around, right, which is halfway through the Shemitah year, Shemitah begins in Rosh Hashanah, so halfway through the Shemitah year, so I have to harvest, because there's this mitzvah of Ktsir HaOmer. Harvesting the wheat, so I can offer the new grain for the year, and even during the Shemitah year, I got to bring the new grain. And that harvest is a mitzvah, that can be done during the Shemitah year. Parenthetically, what would be an example of Charisha, which is a mitzvah? I also don't know if there's such an example. Charish being a mitzvah.
Possibly, in order to
lose the aniyah. I know, but the Charisha won't do anything. It's just plowing. Okay, fine. If anyone can think of something. So anyway, Af Ketzir Rishus. Yatzik Ketzir Omer Shu Mitzvah. Amalei Omer Rabban LaRava Mehai DeCharisha DeRishus. So again, now it'll be the same style of discussion that we had on the previous page. How do I know that Charisha is Rishus? Dilma Charishus Omer DeMitzvah VeAfilu Achem Rechman Tishbos. I don't know. Maybe Charisha and Ketzira is even when there's a mitzvah and the Torah says don't do it. Okay, which in the Hav, I mean, we're not going to accept this, obviously. But in the Hav, I mean, so what do you do when Pesach rolls around? Meaning, I guess you just keep grain from last year before the Shemitah? Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I'm like Kevin, the Imatza Charush, Enu Charesh, La Mitzvah. So here, well, if it's already plowed, you have no obligation or responsibility to plow. Eisvei Ravina LaRava Yatzo Ava Makas Benova Rava Rodes Tamino V'Shlich Besen V'Amai Lema Kim D'Yilu Gamir Lav Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? By your son, if he's learned, you don't have to hit him. And right, and yet that's it's considered part of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says same thing that we said earlier. Hashnami lav mitzvah hasamafagav de gamir nami mitzvah ka'avid. Yeah, look, he could be learned. That's nice. Still, you got to set him on the right course of life. And right, and sometimes that's going to mean that you have to hit him. So dechsev yaser ben chavi nechecha. Okay, hadam arava lav milsi da amre kitzira dumya de charisha. So the Gemara again says that. But over here, it's not the same answer that we saw in the previous Amud. How do I know that over here we're talking about Ktsir Charisha of Rishus? It's voluntary? Because Ktsir Dumi de Charisha, Ma Charisha, Matza Charush, Eino Charisha of Ktsir Nami. Okay, by Charisha, there's no mitzvah to plow, right? It's kind of like what we raised a couple of minutes ago. There's never a mitzvah to plow. if the field's already plowed, so then you move forward, meaning now you plant and now you're going to grow. But if the field isn't plowed, so then you have to plow it. But there's no mitzvah to actually plow. So we're going to assume that Ksir is a similar way. And that's not true by Ketzira. By Ketzira, there is in fact a mitzvah to harvest for the Omer. Right? That's part of the mitzvah. Okay. Fine. So that's, again, so it's basically the same discussion, that it's just not going on our Mishnah, it's going on the discussion of Charish V'Katsir during the Shemitah year. Okay. Good. In the previous Mishnah, what we learned is that there are times when you are exempt from going into Galus, notably when you're doing a mitzvah. So if the father is hitting a son, or the Rebbe is hitting the Talmud, or Shliach Beis Din, so those are mitzvahs, and if God forbid the child were to die, or the person were to die in any of those beatings, so that person, the beater, does not go into exile. Okay? And then we have this next Mishnah. And get ready to be a little bit confused, and hopefully we'll unconfuse. Ha'av gola al yedei haben, father sent into exile on account of the son. Okay, v'haben gola al yedei ha'av, and the son sent into exile on account of the father. Okay, ha'kol golan al yedei Yisrael, everyone sent into galus if the victim was a Jew. V'Yisrael golan al yedeihem, and generally speaking, a Jew is sent into Galus if he's killed by somebody else. No, he's dead. Okay, I listened to myself and I'm like, nah, that's not right. Let's say that again. The Yisrael golan al yedehen, and a Yisrael will, generally speaking, go into Galus if he kills pretty much anybody. Chutz mi ger toshav, except if he kills a ger toshav. Definition will come in just a moment. The ger toshav ain't a gola al yidei ger toshav. You ever going to see a ger toshav in exile? You ever going to see a ger toshav in a ari miklat? Yeah, you will. You're going to find a ger toshav in an ari miklat when he kills another ger toshav. Okay. What is a ger toshav? So Rashi over here does not write. No, he doesn't. Right? Rashi on Chumash writes, he accepts upon himself not to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah, but he eats Nevela and Trefa, but he eats not kosher. Essentially, he's Ger Toshav, he's not a convert, right? The word convert, the Ger, usually we say the word convert. Ger Toshav is not a convert, he just simply says, look, I'm not Jewish, I have no interest in being Jewish, right? You Jews are crazy, but I'll tell you what though, I'd like to live in Israel. No avodah zarah, right? No idolatry. So that's subject to, that's a debate as to whether or not he keeps all seven laws or not. Now, it's strange because every non-Jew has to keep all seven laws. So, ostensibly you're right, but okay, whatever. Okay, ostensibly you're right. Well, hold on 1 second. Wait. So a ger toshav is not a Jew, right? Someone who commits himself, I will not be over to avodah zarah, and presumably the other seven laws as well, and he lives in the land of Israel. This is what we generally refer to as a ger toshav. So if you kill a ger toshav, you don't go into galus. Okay? Again, we're not. Remember, I kept saying this in Sanhedrin. I'm just going to say it once now. We're not. It's a heinous act. Sorry, it's a criminal act. It just happens to be that the legality is over here is that you're not sent into exile. Okay? But no way are we having an ethical discussion of right or wrong over here. It's wrong. It's patently wrong. It's just that the legalities are that you don't go into exile. Okay. Let's go through the Mishnah step by step. Number one, the first line of the Mishnah is like impossible to read. Ha'av gola al yedei ben. Right? The father sent into exile on account of the son. Which means that if the father hits the son, b'shogeg, inadvertently, and kills him, so the father is sent into exile. We just learned in the previous Mishnah, you don't got to remember a lot, we just learned in the previous Mishnah that if the father hits the son and the son dies, the father doesn't go into galus. And this is the Gemara's immediate reaction. Ha'amar yafsa av amakas bano. So the Gemara is almost like we totally forgot what we just learned. Gives the following answer: Digamir. Well, the son is learned, and so therefore the father didn't have to hit the child. The ha'amar ta'afagav de gamir mitzvah ka'aved. So the Gemara says, there's still a mitzvah for the father to hit the son, even if the son is knowledgeable. Bishulya dinagri. So the Gemara says, shulya dinagri, he was teaching his son the business. Right? Woodchopper father says to his son, come, it's time I teach you the business. I'll teach you how to be a woodchopper. And the Gemara says, Shulya Denagre Chiyusahu. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? He's now training his son. His son now is an apprentice to the father. How to be a woodchopper. That's also mitzvah. Learning, teaching your son a profession, the Gemara Kedushin says, is one of the obligations a father has to his son. So that's also a mitzvah. So it's also a mitzvah. And there's also a requirement for the father to do so. So that should also fall under the category of excusable, right? Unfortunate, but the father doesn't have to go into galus. Delamdei. So the Gemara says, well, denagri chiyusi. Delamdei. So right. Digamir. Umnasa achrisa. So the Gemara says, son already had an uman. The son already had a profession. Son already had that ability of how to make a livelihood. And so now, there is no musar over here. There's no teaching him of a job or profession. And the father by accident kills the son. Father's going to go into galus. So in other words, this exemption of a father hitting his son and not going into galus, which is the previous Mishnah, is not always. It's not universal. The father has to be engaged in an educational activity, either learning, job training, right? It has to be that. It can't be punitive, or it can't even right, or haphazard random, meaning the.
He would seek his death.
Huh?
He would seek his death. One of his other children.
We'll talk about that later. Right. Well, yeah. We'll talk about that later. Who would be the Gaol Adam in that case? Right. That. Just a couple days from now, we'll have that discussion. Okay. Fine. Next. Haben gola al yedei ha'av. Okay, now, the next line of the Mishnah is also going to be challenging. Because the next line of the Mishnah talks about a son hitting the father. The Mishnah says the son's going to go into galus. Son hitting the father. Now, wait one second. Reminu. Maka nefesh pala maka aviv. Right? Maka nefesh is with exclusion of someone who was hitting his father. And someone hitting his father, right? Rashi writes, "Prat lamaka aviv shelo chayv galus, elam ishakasa tuliya benefesh sheinu chayv alav, elam ken hargo yafta maka aviv shu chayv alav misa bechabura ba'alma." When you hit your father, a son hits his father, that's a capital crime. All you need to do is make a chabura, and that turns into a capital crime. And it sounds like from the pasuk that when we're making an exclusion over here, we're saying that you're going to be exempt from galus even if you kill the father, right? Right. In other words, remember, maka aviv v'imo mosimas means just making a wound on your parent is going to be a capital crime. And what we're suggesting now, what the Gemara thinks right now, is that it's true, this exemption from going into galus is true even if you end up killing your father. Again, inadvertently, obviously. So here the Gemara is going to line it up and take us back to our classic debate of which is worse, chenek or sayef. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that says that chenek is more severe than sayef. So your shigagas sayef nitna la kapara, shigagas chenek lo nitna la kapara. Right, the act of killing is what's called shigagas sayef. Right, because if you kill intentionally, the crime is going to be the punishment is going to be sayef. The killing of your father is chenek. Right. In other words, I'm sorry, hitting your father is going to be chenek. So, if you're Rabbi Shimon, so chenek is higher up on the ladder than sayef. So now shigagasar nitna lekapara shigachenek lo nitna lekapara. Right, galus is not going to be enough because galus is only going to take care of the murder, but not of the hitting of your father. So, and according to the Chachamim, so yeah, the Shigagas Saif will be enough to be mechaper even for the Shigagas Chenek, and in fact, you would go into Galus. Okay. Rav Amar Pratlo says Chabur Ba'aviv B'Shogeg. Rava says, Rava disagrees, and he says, no, the exclusion is that you make a wound on your father and you do a bishogig. I might have thought that since bemezid, it's punishable by death, so shogig also nami should be sent into galus. So kamash malan, the chiddush is no, that you, if you accidentally hit your father, in other words, since that in theory is a capital crime, if you would, in theory meaning if you were done a bemezid, so then I would have thought that maybe I should go into galus just for hitting my father, and the chiddush is no, I do not. I do not go into galus just for hitting my father by accident, even though had I did that on purpose, it would have been a capital crime, I would have been put to death. Okay. Hakol golin al yidei Yisrael. Okay, hakol golin al yidei Yisrael, lasui emai, lasui eved v'kusi. If a eved or a kusi were to inadvertently, right, accidentally, kill a Jew, they go into exile, which is just if you think about it for a moment, it's really unbelievable, right? An Eved is half a Jew, half a non-Jew, right? He's in that middle period of going through some partial conversion, and now he's an Eved Kenani. He has to keep Shabbos, and he has to do all the mitzvahs that a woman is required to do, plus he has to get a milah, but he's not allowed to, okay, he's in the middle, right? That's an Eved. If he accidentally kills a Jew, he goes into exile, which in of itself is just an unbelievable concept. That means that exile will provide a kapara for him and will provide an atonement for him.
Why do you think it's so unbelievable?
Just because... Right. I guess because it doesn't work, the inverse doesn't work. Let's reverse. Let's say you kill an Eved Kenani. You don't have to go into galus. So, right, he... Galus is enough to provide him a kapara, but if he kills, if a Jew kills him, Jew doesn't need the galus kapara. Again, it's a heinous crime, right? We all understand, but he doesn't. So there's no equivalency.
Wouldn't the eved be subject to his owner's whim on avenging the situation, even outside of what Yer Miklat can offer? In other words, let's say the Jew that he killed was the friend of his owner. As the owner, wouldn't he have certain carte blanche to the situation by virtue of the fact that he's an Eved?
No, I don't think so. In other words, no. Okay. No, he doesn't have that kind. He has control over him, but not. Right, not total dominion. And then the next one is also going to be wild because the next one's talking about a kusi, which means that if a kusi, now a kusi, you know, when the Gemara says the word kusi, right, it's always tough to figure out what the Gemara's talking about. Is the Gemara literally talking about a kusi? Literally, that would mean that we're talking about one of the supplanted northern tribers, meaning not a Jew, but someone that when the king of Assyria, Sancheriv, exiled the 10 northern tribes, he replaced them with these people from Kusa, and they converted, but the conversion was a forced conversion, and the Gemara has a generational debate. Are they real converts? Are they fake converts? Right? Geira Emes, Geira Arayos. Or the Gemara over here could be talking about just simply a non-Jew. Right? Sometimes the Gemara uses the word Kusi to describe a general non-Jew. It's not super clear over here what kusi means, okay? But anyway, the point is that if an eved or a kusi were to kill a Jew, they go into exile. Tanila de Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa spells it out. Eved v'kusi gola v'loka al yidei Yisrael. An eved and a kusi will both go into exile and sometimes get malchus on account of a Jew. And a Jew goes into exile and gets malchus on account of a Kusi and Eved. Okay, now, here's what we know. Bishlam Eved v'kusi, gola yidei Yisrael v'loke, gola dekatle. The example of Golos would be where the Kusi or the Eved killed the Jew. They go into exile. V'loke delache. And what would be a case of Malkus where they cursed a Jew? The Pasuk says, Nasibam Chal lo sa'or, there's a prohibition of not cursing a fellow Jew. And so therefore, if the Kusi on the Eved cursed a fellow Jew, so they're gonna get lashes on account of that. Okay.
But is this Ba'amcha?
Well, because they are. Well, hold on 1 second, because your question is going to become a valid one. But right now, we're talking about where they hit a Jew, so he's ba'amcha for sure. Ella Yisrael gola v'loka al yidei kusi bishlam a gola dekatle. So, if a Jew were to inadvertently kill a Eved Kenani or a kusi, so then fine. So then I understand. Now, what are we talking about in the terms of getting Malkus? Where he cursed Venasibam Chalosaur Basamasem Amecha. Only when they are obligated and behaving like a Jew is there a prohibition to curse. Otherwise, there's no prohibition to curse. Elam Rav Acher Yaakov Kagon Sheid Bo Vihuzam. So the Gemara says, well, maybe a case would be where they testified about somebody and turned into Edom Zomimim. The Gemara says that's not a good answer. Yeah, but you're not going to have an Eved testifying. An Eved cannot testify. That's not a good answer. Okay, fine. So an answer would be where you hit an Eved Kenani, but it wasn't enough to create any monetary liability. So now all you did is just hit with no monetary liability. If a Jew hits an Eved Kenani or a Kusi, he's going to be exempt. He's going to get malchus. It's a prohibition to hit. Exactly. And there's no hekesh, there's no connection between cursing and hitting. Even though you're allowed to curse, right, or I don't know about, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. Even though there's no punishment for cursing, that's a better way to say it, but still there's going to be a punishment for hitting. Okay. There is, by the way. I retract on what I said earlier. You're 100% correct. You're correct. I'm a ger toshav, avi kochavim, who a ger toshav is a non-Jew, I'm a sefer ger toshav, gol ayide ger toshav. The ger toshav goes into exile if he kills another ger toshav. Amrav kan lo kasha kan be ger toshav shaharag ger toshav kan be ger toshav shaharag Yisrael. Depends who the ger toshav hits and kills. If a ger toshav kills another ger toshav, exile. If a ger toshav kills another Jew, no galus. Rashi says that it's galus is not enough. Right? Rashi says it straight out. A ger toshav shaharag ger toshav. Rashi is right alongside where we are in the Gemara. Gola, you sent into exile. Kediktana be'edja v'reisha. Kishahara gitzisrael ain't a gola. Delosagi le begalos. Exile is not going to be enough. Right? It's difficult. It's always difficult to gauge what is enough kapara, what isn't enough kapara. But the Gemara here tells us it's not going to be enough kapara for ger toshav when he kills a Jew inadvertently to just simply sent into exile. I mean, a non-Jew could bring kabbana, so that's okay, yeah. Ikad rami like kra, adadik sivul of nei yisrael v'la ger v'la toshav besocham tiena shesharim. On one hand, with the arim miklat for everybody, even the ger toshav, uksiv ayulachem harim lemiklat lachem v'lo legerim, for you and not for gerim, not for these ger toshav. I'm Rav Kahana lo kasha kam be ger toshav shara ger yisrael kam be der ger toshav shara ger toshav. Good. So it depends who he kills. If a ger toshav kills a ger toshav, he goes into exile. If a ger toshav kills a Jew, he doesn't go into exile. And again, Rashi says it's just not enough. A little bit further for this morning. Very minute. Lefichah ger v'al v'kocham shargu ne'eragin. Ketane ger domi del v'kochavim. El v'kochavim. Loshna dekata barminei, veloshna dekata la barminei, neherag, avgir, loshna dekata barminei, veloshna dekata de la barminei, neherag. So, from this braisa, it sounds like when a ger toshav kills, it doesn't matter who the victim is, he's going to be put to death. Amar Rav Chista lo kasha, kancha harag derech yirida, kancha hargu derech aliyah, derech yirida diyisrael gale, iunami sagile begalos. If it's in a downward motion, so I'm sorry. Derech Yerida Yisrael Gali Yunami Sagalei Begalus Derech Aliyah Yisrael Paturhu Neharag. Right. I'm sorry. In a downward motion, just like a Jew sent into exile because that's shogeg. Same thing with a ger. In an upward motion, right, which we said was an ones. So in the case the Yisrael Paturhu. Nerag, he's put to death. Amalei Rav of Lav Kavachomeru. Umad Derech Yerida Yisrael Gali Yunami Sagalei Begalus Derech Aliyah Yisrael Paturhu Yun Nerag. So the Gemara says, but wait a second. In an upward motion, that's ones. Right. So why are we putting him to death? Elam Rava Omer Mutter. So then Rava says, we're talking about a case where Omer Mutter, where he said that it's permissible. Okay. Stop over here. It's not a good stopping place. I apologize. Just one thing, however, that I will highlight. Maybe tomorrow I'll pick this up. I'll pick up on this. There's an unbelievable Rashi. You know, we're talking now about a Ben Noach committing murder, right? And Rashi, I'll just say it once now, and then tomorrow I'll pick up on it. Rashi writes, "Kaimel Nazar San Zui Misa San Leficha Chir Toshav Ove Kachav Shehargu Neragin." Right? If a Ger Toshav, or for that matter, any non-Jew, if he kills, he's put to death. And Rashi writes, look at the next two words of Rashi. The afilu b'shogeg, even if he does so b'shogeg, shame b'nei Noach nitzrichem asra, because b'nei Noach don't need a warning, and since they don't need a warning, even b'shogeg they're put to death. Rashi says it straight out. We'll talk more about this tomorrow, right? That if a non-Jew commits murder inadvertently, it's a capital crime and they're put to death. Without, well, I mean, they don't need asra. They don't need asra, but they're put to death. So. Right, you can only imagine. By the way, that's an explosive statement by Rashi that even b'shogeg it's still a capital crime, right? Okay, we'll talk. Huh? Yeah.
Did the other Rishonim?
Yeah. Okay, we'll stop over here.